Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Cesar Romero.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. And today, I'm excited to bring on the CEO and co-founder of ZoomInfo, Henry Schuck, onto the show. And we're going to be diving deeper into his entrepreneurial journey as he built up ZoomInfo, and also talking about how to leverage data and AI to grow your sales and marketing teams, and also how ZoomInfo was able to grow their team amidst the pandemic. So it's an exciting episode. And Henry, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Cesar. It's great to be here with you.
Absolutely. So to start off, Henry, let's dive into your entrepreneurial journey, right? Where did the idea for ZoomInfo came about? And what have been like the biggest challenges throughout this journey?
Yeah, so I founded ZoomInfo when I was 23 years old. I was in my first year of law school at the Ohio State University in Columbus. But the real journey started about 5 years before that, when after my first year in college, I was out of money and needed a job. So I went out looking for a job in Las Vegas and found a company that was an early entrant in the SaaS and data and intelligence space. And I took this job. It paid $12 an hour. So I was excited to get it, and started learning about how a software and data business worked. And so we started, we went out to market. We went out to market at the company in college, and we grew it from about $300,000 in revenue to $5 million in revenue in a really short period of time, in about 4 years. And this was in 2000, when there weren't really other software models or annual recurring subscription models that actually existed. I learned a ton from that. Went off to law school after my first year. We started the company. I put $25,000 on my credit card. My co-founder put $25,000 on his credit card. And we went out to market selling a platform of data and intelligence to our customers. And it was a similar company to the company I had worked for in college, but we wanted to build it differently. We wanted to invest in the business. We really wanted to grow it in a smart and profitable way. And you know, in 2007, there wasn't a lot of venture capital money being thrown around. And there also wasn't, there was especially not a lot of venture capital money being thrown around in Columbus, Ohio.
Right.
And so the only way you could really build and run a business was to do it profitably. And so we were very intentional about every dollar that we spent. And we made sure that every dollar that we spent, we were getting real return on. And so the business has been, you know, growing and profitable since its inception.
That's amazing. And what were, you know, from your first venture, what were some of the lessons or I guess mistakes that you learned from that you carried over onto building ZoomInfo?
Yeah, like I think a couple things. The company that I worked for while I was in college really wasn't investing in the company. So I said we grew from about $300,000 in revenue in 2001 to about $5 million in revenue when I left in 2006, but the company grew from like two employees to like seven employees. And so you go from $300,000 in revenue to $5 million in revenue,
right?
But you only add five headcount. There wasn't much of a business there. And so I think the biggest lesson that I learned was, if you have a business and you're seeing opportunities in different, you know, in customer bases, you have great product market fit, you should be investing in your go-to-market motion. You should be hiring new salespeople. You should be bringing on a marketing motion that generates leads that drives your business forward. There was tremendous demand for our solution, from day one. And so your job, when you have that tight market fit, product market fit and you have great demand for your products and solutions, is to really build a motion that gets your products in front of the right buyers, gets in front of them at the right time, and grows the company. And I think what happens a lot of the times is founders spend a lot of time focused on the product and really not a lot of time focused on the distribution engine for the product. And they're equally important. And so we made sure that we were putting money back into the business. For the first 4 years, I made $2,000 a month. I graduated law school, passed the bar, was making $2,000 a month. My friends were making, you know, $150,000 at big law firms and charging steak dinners to their corporate card. Right. And I was working in this like really horrible office, making $2,000 a month, and moved to Portland, Oregon in 2009 when I finished law school, but really focused on making sure that all of the additional money that we had that the business was generating was being invested back into the business.
That is so important. And, you know, throughout my conversations with founders, that's one of the biggest themes that comes up is you should be investing in the business, because otherwise, right, it's just going to make it harder, right, to grow and scale the business. So
yeah, so I think the job is like figuring out where the business needs the investment most.
Right.
And really balancing that. And, you know, it's not just dollars. It's also your time and resources. Like where, when I would come to work, when the company was small, even today, but back then I would think like, where does the company need me the most today? Is it in engineering? Is it in product? Is it in go-to-market? Is it in marketing? And I would make sure that I was spending my time in the most resource efficient way, so that I was putting the resources into the most necessary areas of the business. You should think about that with investments. How are you prioritizing them? Which ones are the most important? You know, the best way to do that is to make sure you're listening to your customers and you're understanding what they need and what they're saying. What are they saying about the product? What's happening in the sales motion? Are you winning? Are you losing? Are competitors positioned better against you? And then making sure you're adjusting your business and improving it constantly. I think that's the biggest thing you can continually do.
Now, walk us through some info. Right? What's the process like to help organizations, you know, grow their sales and marketing? Right? Like what does that entail?
Yeah. So when we started, ZoomInfo was when we started the company, what we're focused on doing is providing data to sales and marketing organizations about the companies that they were targeting and the buyers at those companies they should be engaging with. And then really providing them a number of advanced filtering capabilities that allow them to find exactly the right company at exactly the right time, and then with the information that they needed to actually engage with those companies. And what it grew to, what it is today, it is still at its core, there's this incredibly robust data foundation. It includes data on companies, about 100 million companies. It includes data on the business professionals at those companies, 150 million business professionals that we track with title, job history, direct phone number, email address, mobile phone number. So the data you need to engage, where they went to school, what their prior employment history was like, when they got their last promotion. And then on top, and then next to that, we include intent data. So data that you use to know when a company is actually researching your products and services. And then a number of additional data like funding data, how much funding has the company gotten? When did they get funding? Do they have a project or initiative around information security or new office location? So we take that data foundation and then we've built an application layer on top of that that allows our customers to actually use that data to engage with buyers. And so they can use it through our email and sales automation technology. They can use it to make calls, send emails, engage on chat. They can use it to bring that data into their CRM systems. Mm-hmm. And so if they're in HubSpot or Salesforce or Dynamics, our data lives side by side in those platforms. So their sellers always have access to the most accurate insights available on their markets. But what we see the most is companies that have, especially in the SMB, companies that have built really great product, but they haven't built an organized digital motion to acquire their next customers. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what the end goal is for your go-to-market motion. there's no question that the first step is making sure you understand the companies that you should be selling to and who the people at the companies are that buy your products and services. You can figure out when you're going to engage, what signals you need around that. You can figure out how you're going to engage. Are you going to do it through email or phone or display ads or LinkedIn ads or Facebook ads? Are you going to target them at events? Whatever it is, you have to know who your total addressable market is and who the decision makers at those companies are. And then you can start getting smart with what signals are you going to use and how to engage with them that give you the right time. Like, for example, a lot of our customers will say, look, when a company adds a specific technology to their technology stack, that's when we want to go in. So for example, if a company moves from QuickBooks to NetSuite, that's a major sign of financial sophistication. And so every time that happens, I want to be in front of the customer talking to them about subscription billing or advancing their information security profile or whatever it is. But you can use a number of these little unique signals in our platform to really automate how you engage with your buyers and open up the universe to all of the potential customers you should be selling to.
This is so exciting. And you know, it's you hear it all the time, right? Know your customer, know your prospects, know who you're talking to. But a lot of times, right, we're missing that data, right, to leverage that intelligence. And I'm so excited that ZoomInfo is able to provide that. And right top of mind, the biggest question that came to mind as I was listening to you was, how do you keep all this data updated?
Like, yeah.
How do you manage that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think, first of all, let me back up a little bit. Today, we serve, you know, from the law school dorm in 2007 to today, today we serve 25,000 plus customers, about half of the Fortune 500. We're on our last earnings call, we're at nearly an $800 million revenue run rate. The business is growing. It continues to be profitable. And customers of all sizes are using ZoomInfo to identify their next best customers. Everything from a pecan exporter in Georgia to, you know, the largest company in the world. So it really spans the spectrum. The one thing they all have in common is they're all selling to other businesses. Our platform is all about business information, business contact information, and running business to business motions. Now, when you're managing 150 million business professionals, 100 million companies, those are changing constantly. Like, you can't find me a company that looks the same on December 31st as it did on January 1st. They just don't. Companies are changing, they're growing, they're shrinking, they're hiring new executives, they're getting new funding, opening new locations, adding new technologies to their technology stack, they're getting new customers, losing customers, partnering with new people. And all of those changes don't get reflected in the systems that we're using to engage with our customers.
Right.
Because there's no like big vacuum to suck all that information in, make sense of it, and then deliver it into the systems of record that we're using to make decisions about, you know, which customers are at risk, which customers have the best potential, which customers are growing, shrinking. Did my champion at the company leave recently? Right. And so we have built a set of robust networks, a freemium network where people get limited free access to ZoomInfo in exchange for their email contacts. A customer contributory network where customers share certain information that exists in their CRM and marketing automation systems with us. And then we've built an indexing engine that goes across literally millions of unique sources across the web, pulls all that information into an evidence-based machine learning algorithm. And that algorithm makes sense of what to publish and what not to. I'll give you two examples there. One is we've built a system that goes to a company's leadership page, takes a snapshot of the leadership page, looks at all the people on there, and then comes back a week later and looks and sees if it's changed. Then comes back a week later and looks and sees if it changes. We do that across millions of different leadership pages. And so we're constantly seeing if someone was removed from the leadership page, if someone was added to the leadership page. That's one of those millions of unique sources that comes in. And when it comes in, for example, when it comes in, it'll come in like this. Let's say Cameron Heiser, who's our chief financial officer, before he was our chief financial officer here at ZoomInfo, he's chief financial officer at a company called S Software. let's say that when Cameron Heiser became the chief financial officer at ZoomInfo, we saw someone from our freemium network add him as a contact. So we captured that information. We saw from our customer contributory network an email bounce to Cameron's S software email. That's a piece of information that goes into the machine learning engine. And then we saw him removed from the leadership page at the company. Mm-hmm. And then we saw him added to the leadership page at ZoomInfo. The machine learning engine is taking all of those signals and it says, well, look, I've got a lot of evidence that says Cameron is CFO at S Software. Mm-hmm. He, you know, we've seen him through a bunch of our different networks. We've seen him in press releases. His name is all over the place. But now I've got a bunch of records on the other side that say maybe he's not there anymore. He's been left, he removed from the leadership page. He's showing up on a new leadership page. His emails are bouncing. All of those signals tip the scale. And then we remove Cameron from the S Software profile. We publish him inside of the ZoomInfo profile. We're doing that hundreds of thousands of times a day, millions of times a month. Millions of times a week to keep all of that information updated. And it could be everything from a company, a piece of company information, a revenue number, an employee number, a technology stack number, a new location to the people level information, title change, mm-hmm. title gets updated. We also leverage about 300 internal research analysts here at ZoomInfo who are constantly sort of feeding the engines and making the engines and the machine learning engines smarter. It's a human in the loop process that makes sure that the models that we're using to make those types of decisions are constantly getting smarter. And so we're able to leverage sort of humans in the loop to get that system smarter and smarter and smarter.
That's so impressive. I mean, it's just, there's so many words I have to describe this whole process. And two questions I wanted to ask you here. One, if you could share with us, maybe like in general terms, one of your clients or companies that, you know, the before and then the after, you know, by going through ZoomInfo.
Totally.
You know? Yeah. So
I'll give you a pandemic example, which is a fun and interesting one. We had a company, so the pandemic hit, mm-hmm. we had a company come to us, the company's name was TentCraft. Mm. TentCraft came to us and they said, hey, look, we make, and this is like a 25-30 person company in Traverse City, Michigan. It's a small business, great entrepreneur.
Right.
They had built a really great business making tents, outdoor tents. And they made these outdoor tents for events. And so you would go to like an outdoor event and there would be a tent outside for vendors or check-in or ticketing or mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. The pandemic hit, you know, in late February, March, and literally every event on the face of the earth wiped out. And so here I am, a business that's making, or TentCraft's a business that's making mm-hmm. tents for events, and their entire market just got obliterated. There aren't many industries that were so like uniformly shut down mm-hmm. as sort of events. If you worked in the event space, your world got absolutely turned on its head. And if I make outdoor tents for events, I'm in a bad place. And so the entrepreneur is looking at the company and he's like, okay, like I'm going to have to lay people off and close mm-hmm. this business. And I don't know if it ever comes back. And I'm going to have to go get a job because I have a family to support. Right. And he came to us and he said, look, I think that these tents could work well as outdoor COVID-19 testing tents. So if you're driving through a hospital and you want to do outdoor COVID-19 testing, mm-hmm. you have this, we can repurpose our tents for hospitals to do this COVID-19 testing. But I've never sold to a hospital. I don't know how many hospitals there are in the United States. I don't know who the decision makers at those hospitals are. I don't know how to get a hold of them.
Right.
I only sell to event managers. That's been my business. Mm-hmm. Can you help me do that? So we gave him access to our healthcare data asset. We gave him access to the digital technologies that ZoomInfo has that allows you to engage and connect with the decision makers at those companies. And in the first week after that, He sold a set of tents to a hospital in Pennsylvania, and then a hospital in Texas, and then a hospital in New Jersey. And in May, he had the largest revenue month in the history of his business. And this is a business that 2 months earlier was getting ready to shut its doors. It's Wow. a business that without access to a tool like ZoomInfo, without access to that data, just goes away. 20 years ago, that company just doesn't make it through the pandemic. It just Wow. doesn't. They just cannot Wow. figure out how to sell to hospitals. To the extent they could, they're going to be driving around Michigan, right? To the different hospitals around Michigan, trying to sell. They have now like global access to hospitals who may need tents, and they're selling a bunch of them. And that's really, I think, an incredibly impactful story, but it also tells you the power of the go-to-market motion, because here's a company that has a great product. It's growing, it's successful, it's a good product, but without the go-to-market motion working, that's a business that just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I'm having goosebumps because that's such a great story of how you were able to, or ZoomInfo was able to help these businesses turn around in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah,
all by leveraging.
And there's a bunch of stories like that too. Like we had a bunch of clients who, you know, there's a company called Arnold Silk Home that sold draperies, indoor draperies. Well, you got to go into a house, into an office to sell those. In the middle of a pandemic, no one's letting you in anymore. And so they shifted their manufacturing facilities to selling PPE. And then same thing, like, well, who do you sell PPE to? Well, all of a sudden he started selling it to hospitals. So they were able to make that shift mid-pandemic to keep their business alive. And look, those are extreme examples because they're businesses that were like at the brink of falling over. But every day we have companies where the sales motion is just not working the way they anticipated. The company's just not growing the way that they expected. And they need to do something to change the trajectory of their business. And the first place you start is with data and intelligence on your customers and the companies you want to sell to. That's just where you start.
Where do you see this trend of data and AI and automation? Like, where do you see it going in the next 5 to 10 years? And what will be your best recommendation for any company, you know, looking to leverage this trend?
Yeah, I think, look, the biggest, most obvious change in the way that companies sell and market their services is we went from a world 20 years ago that was highly offline. Sales were done at the country club. They were done on the golf course. They were done with a fancy steak dinner and tickets to a Lakers game.
Right.
And that's just not the world in which we sell anymore. Most of our interactions from a sales perspective, a marketing perspective, they're all digital. They're happening on Zoom meetings like this. They're happening through chat on your website. They're happening through phone calls. They're happening on your website as people read and download content and visit your pages. They're happening on the B2B web as people research products and solutions that are like yours. And all of those digital interactions that your potential customers are having or that you're having with potential customers can be corralled and made sense of so that you're running an incredibly efficient motion. The difference today versus 20 years ago is there is a digital fingerprint for all the interactions you're having with your customers or potential customers. And you should be leveraging those to decide who you're going to reach out to, when you're going to reach out to them, what you're going to say when you reach out to them, what content you're going to share, what they're going to be most interested in, whether a deal is going well or poorly. All of that information can be gleaned today because it all has a digital fingerprint that we can grab and start making sense of in our go-to-market motions. And it starts with your websites. It's your conversations you're having with customers where you can start leveraging if a customer talks about a competitor or says something about pricing or budget or stops interacting with you. All of those are signals that can help you understand where a deal is in the cycle, whether it's progressing well, whether it's not, what other information you should send those folks. And so the future is using AI and machine learning to make sense of all of those digital touch points so that we can all run our go-to-market motions more effectively and more efficiently.
I like what you mentioned on, you know, every interaction has, it's a digital touch point, because they are, right? And there's so many channels these days that bringing everything together and centralizing things, you know, it's a big trend, right? As we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you ever find clients of some info that they might get overwhelmed with the amount of data, or they might know like, okay, I have all these data, but where do I start? Like, you know.
Yes, totally. First, it's a journey, right? Like where what we do from a go-to-market perspective today is far more sophisticated than most companies. It's also way more sophisticated than what we did from a go-to-market perspective 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's very different. So I think where you start is, who are my my potential customers? Who are the buyers at those customers? How do I want to engage with them? Mm. Those are your first three questions. If you don't know the answers to those questions and you don't have it at your fingertips in a digital way, there's just no way to run a good motion. Because you're going to go out and market to the world, but why are you going to market to the world if only a portion of the world cares about your products or services? If you sell to hospitals, there's no reason to market your products and services to manufacturing companies and software companies and financial services companies. Once you know that universe of companies that you want to reach and the universe of buyers at those companies you want to reach, that drives every next motion for your business. And so that's where you start. And if you don't have that at your fingertips, like, and you don't have it in a digital way, you're just not running the motion efficiently, because you're going to iterate and sophisticate along the way. Now that I have that data, I want an automated way to reach them. I want to put display ads in front of them when something changes in their business. I want to reach out to them when they gain funding. I want to reach out when there's a new CEO or a new CFO. You can start sophisticating how you reach out to those customers, but you just need to know who they are first.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. You know, sticking to the basics is a lot of entrepreneurs, as we talked about at the beginning of the episode, they tend to get distracted, right? They focus on other things. But having those basics down, like, you know, where are your customers? What kind of messaging resonates with them? I mean, it's so important, right?
100%
to get that. I want to shift gears here and talk a little bit more about the growth of ZoomInfo, because you know, in the middle of a pandemic, ZoomInfo was able to almost double the team in size, right? So I wanted to ask you, from your perspective, you know, what are some of the systems that you had in place to achieve this growth, and what recommendations would you have for, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners?
Yeah, look, first, I think of the recruiting motion very much in the same way as I think about the sales motion. Mm-hmm. It's a funnel. If you want to hire one candidate, how many emails are you sending? How many calls are you making? How many LinkedIn emails are you sending? How many touches do you need to have across how many people to gain that one candidate? How many interviews do you have to do? How many offers do you have to present to win that candidate? And so we architect our talent acquisition team to really understand those metrics. Mm-hmm. If we have to hire 100 people in the next quarter, we need to know every day, where are we from a pacing perspective? How many have we hired? How many have we emailed? How many have we called? How many are in the interview stage? How many are in the offer stage? How many have accepted? And really understanding constantly where you are from a metrics perspective is how you want to run the recruiting process and how we run the recruiting process. And look, when I first started ZoomInfo and I talked about this as a concept to sales and marketers told me, no, you don't understand. That's not how we run our sales process. We're much more bespoke. Our founder knows everybody. Like, will you leverage our network? This is not that kind of sale. It doesn't work for us. Mm-hmm. It was just a bunch of baloney. Like, that's just not true. If you want to run a scaled go-to-market motion, you have to have metrics to understand what's going on and how it's going. And so in the recruiting space, we're often met with, like, now 15 years later, by the way, that objection is gone. Almost nobody says that anymore, like on the sales side. No one's saying like, oh no, I shouldn't run my business with metrics and have it be automated and you know, understand the funnel. Today in recruiting, it's much like the world of 10 years ago in sales and marketing, in that the recruiters are saying very much the same thing. Like, we run a very bespoke process. I can't engage in an automated way. You know, candidates don't like when we engage that way. It's, again, it's just the same baloney they were saying about sales. It's just in a different group of the market. That's how we run our business. That's how we doubled our team during the pandemic. And then, you know, look, the next most important piece of hiring is making sure you're onboarding quickly, making sure that it's a great experience for the new employee when they come get started, and then making sure you're doing the right things to retain those employees. You know, we do something internally at ZoomInfo where when we hire the employee, the recruiter checks in every week. In the first week, they send them sort of like pointers, like, hey, here are the things that I've learned that make people successful at ZoomInfo for the first week. Make sure you're doing this, make sure you're doing that, make sure you're doing this. And they check in on them, you know, for the next 8 weeks to make sure things are going well, to help sort of guide them through their new position at the company. And so really making sure you're bringing people in well, you're onboarding and ramping them really well, and then you're setting them up for success so that you're going to retain them for the long run. I think those are, you know, really important things that you can actually automate a lot of, but are important to think of the same way you think about a funnel. What happens after you close a customer, right? Like, you got to onboard them. You've got to implement them. You got to make sure they're going to be successful or they're not going to be your client next year. That's no different than an employee that you hire at your company. If they come into your business and you don't onboard them well, you don't implement them well, you don't set them up for success well, they're probably not going to be your employee a year from now. And so I really think like the motion on the employee side and the motion on the sales side, from retention to implementation and success, is they have all the same analogies.
I'm so happy that you brought that up because it's true. There's no difference. At least, you know, in my opinion, acquisition, activation, retention, it's the same whether you have a product or you're bringing on new people onto your team. And I'm surprised at how many companies get the onboarding wrong, right? Like that, that should be one of the most important things. And like following up, right? Like, hey, how are you doing? Just checking in. Here are some things that have worked for me. Like things like that, that make you feel more valued, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Same as a customer, right?
Same.
Your customer comes on, you take a month or 2 months to sell them. They go to their boss, they convince their boss like, hey, let's spend $40,000 or $10,000 on this thing. Then you spend it. If you're just like gone after they spend the money, like they're not going to be successful. They're going to be upset with you. You're going to have a customer who doesn't retain with you. And exactly the same thing happens in your employee base.
Absolutely. Now, ZoomInfo IPO back in June 2020, right? And I wanted to ask you if there's anything different, you know, the before and after, when it comes to running the company. Has anything changed, or what's been the biggest difference for you personally?
Yeah, look, a lot changes when you go from private to public. You gain a new set of investors, and you know, historically at ZoomInfo, I had two sets of investors, three sponsors on my board. And managing that group of investors was fine. We had like a 7 years of relationship with two of them, kind of 3 years of relationship with the other one. We saw eye to eye on everything. I had a lot of time with them, so they understood the vision and direction I was taking the company. And then you go public and you have 100 investors and probably 30 who are really important and they don't really know you and they don't have any operating history with you. And you don't get the elongated amounts of time with those investors so they understand you and they understand your motivation and they believe in your direction. You have to do that in little 30-minute meetings.
Right.
And so just managing a base of public equity investors is very different than managing a base of private company investors. That's one. The other is vision and communication become like your two of your biggest responsibilities that maybe they were there and right. important pre going public, but all of a sudden, every day, basically, you need to articulate your vision for the company and explain where you're going. Because unless you do that, you can't really do anything within the business mm-hmm. that the investors aren't going to appreciate. I'll give you an example. We did an acquisition of a company called Chorus.ai. Mm-hmm. Chorus is a conversation intelligence company. And so essentially it sits on your customer calls, your internal calls, it records those calls, it transcribes them, and then it gives you the key insightful moments on those calls. It's great for onboarding. Like when we hire new account executives, we just give them best practices playlists. Like here's our best people responding to this objection. Perfect. Here's our best people talking about the pricing objection. Here's a perfect demo. Here's a perfect ask for next steps. And so we're onboarding 40% faster with Chorus than we were doing previously. But when we made that acquisition, one of the members of my board, one of my sponsors, called me and said, "Hey, look, how is the market going to react to this acquisition?" Mm. And I said, "Look, I don't know how the market reacts in the short term. I right. don't know. What I do know is in the long term, with our long holding shareholders, I have told them that this is exactly the kind of acquisition I'm going to make. I have told them that I'm going to look for companies that are central to the go-to-market motion, where our data can make them better, where our team can accelerate them, the product into our customer base, where I believe that it's that this is a technology that sales professionals are going to use for the next decade with total conviction." And when we go and tell the market that we acquired Chorus, I'm going to be able to tell them, we're going to be able to accelerate it. Our data is going to make a strategic difference in the product. It's central to the way that salespeople are going to operate for the next decade. And I'm incredibly convicted about that. It's going to be accretive in the short term. Mm-hmm. So all those things that I've been telling these investors who invest in me and invest in ZoomInfo for the last year, about when I'm going to do M&A, this is going to check all of those boxes. Now, I can't go buy an ice cream business because it's going to check none of those boxes.
Right.
And so if I bought an ice cream business, I couldn't tell you, I could probably guess that the investors are going to react really poorly. But I've laid out my vision. I've been very clear about it. And they've been backers of that vision. And so I'm not worried about their reaction to this. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be enthusiastic about it. And they were. Mm-hmm.
That's so important.
But not having that vision crystallized and articulated and repeated over and over and over to all of those investors would put me in a really bad place because I'd just be guessing. I don't know. Maybe they'll think it's good. Maybe yeah. they won't understand it. So really being able to crystallize your vision for the business, articulate it to your investors, that became a very important skill. Not one that I wasn't great at that. Mm-hmm. Like that wasn't a superpower of mine. I had to learn it really like right before the IPO and then post IPO. And it's actually, you know, it's super beneficial for our employees too, because they're not confused about the direction we're going, what we're trying to build, what matters and what doesn't matter. It, previous to the IPO, they had to kind of guess at that, mainly because I wasn't spending time nailing that for them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't at the time the most important thing that I needed to be doing. Then we became a public company, and all of a sudden it did become one of the most important things that I needed to do.
I love that, Henry, because vision is one of those things, right, that you know it's important, but I don't know, a lot of founders I work with, it's just there, right?
You're busy doing stuff most yeah, exactly. of the time, you know, like the house is always burning when exactly. you're a smaller company and like you're out there like putting out fires and driving the business forward and saving a customer and landing a customer and fixing an issue and the site went down. you know, and like you're doing all of this stuff that the concept of sitting down and articulating your vision when like you're just sort of like in execution mode is really hard to find the time for. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to connect the investment of time to a value in the business.
Yes.
When you're small.
Yeah.
As you get bigger, mm-hmm. more and more people have to be connected to the vision of the company, and they're not going to get time with you to hear it. And so it is really important for you to like articulate it in a way that people understand.
Yeah, 100% agree with you on that. Because, you know, with the vision, it's going to attract the right investors, the right teammates, the right opportunities, because people will gravitate towards that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
One quick thing I wanted to ask before we wrap it up here is what was the biggest driver for you to go public? Because I know, you know, sometimes it can be, I mean, it is a big decision, right?
Yeah.
But for you, what was that big driver like, hey, we're going to do this?
Look, I think not when I started the business, I didn't imagine being a public company. I imagined just building a really good business. Mm-hmm. And as the business grew and got scale and we grew and had the opportunity to do M&A, at some point, I think in my head, I said, it would be great to be a public company. That's mm-hmm. kind of like, in my view, the Super Bowl of business. Mm-hmm. And if you have an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl of business, you should probably take that opportunity. Yeah. Now, there's a question of, is the company ready? Are you forecasting well? Do you mm-hmm. have the right team? Can mm-hmm. you succeed out there? And you have to get all of those things right. Otherwise, you shouldn't be a public company, no matter how much you want to be a public company, because it just won't go very well. But we felt like we built a company of scale. It was unique in the sense that it was growing the top line and profitable. It was architected internally and instrumented internally in a way that we could forecast well. We could see issues coming early. We would make good decisions. I have a great leadership team. And I felt really confident about going public with them behind me. And the company was geared for future success. And the public markets pay a premium to the private markets from mm-hmm. a valuation perspective. At least they did. I don't know if that's true. They right. did in June of 2020. The private market valuations on businesses today are a little crazy. So I couldn't tell you with total confidence that that's still the case. But they did, and they usually do. And so we felt really good about going into the public markets. It was good for our shareholders. It was great for our employees. It was a great validation moment for the company.
Right.
And so we felt really good about it.
I love it. And I love that you mentioned the different things that needed to be aligned before even considering going public, right?
Yeah.
Like the right team, leadership. That's yep. so important. Now, one of the things I like to ask every guest on the show is, you know, the most recommended book or the most gifted book. And if you're not a reader, then your most recommended either a course or podcast where you level up a little bit, right? Like, so yep. I wanted to ask you if you could share with us.
I would probably say The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is maybe the best book ever written.
Yes.
It's old. Yeah, it's old, but it's great. It's a good. Really great book. And you see so often, I have seen so often at ZoomInfo that where you're able to find win-win opportunities and unlock yourself internally, so much of your success is how you communicate, how you show up as a leader, how yes. you partner with your teammates. Mm-hmm. And when I was younger, I felt like that stuff was all just like corporate gobbledygook.
Right.
It was like, oh, everybody talks about this. Oh, unlock your mind kind of stuff. And I didn't pay much attention to it. And then now I'm such a believer in communicating properly, partnering with your team, And if you do that right, you really unlock the potential of the people around you. And if you're able to do that, you know, success is in a practical inevitability.
I agree with you. And yeah, it's about unlocking your potential and your teammates, you know, and the company's potential, right?
100%.
I love that. Henry, where can people find out more about ZoomInfo, get connected with you? You know, what are one of the best ways to do that?
So our website is zoominfo.com. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Henry L. Shuck, Henry L. S-C-H-U-C-K. I'm also on LinkedIn. It's just linkedin.com/H-S-C-H-U-C-K. Or my email is in ZoomInfo, but for everybody, it's just henry.shuck@zoominfo.com.
I love it. We'll make sure to put those in the show notes. But for now, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your story, how ZoomInfo can help businesses with their data and business intelligence. And I'm personally looking forward to doing future shows with you, maybe talk more, a little deeper into these trends that are changing the business landscape. But for now, thanks so much.
Thank you, Caesar. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.